WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. This is Jason, and with me today is Razor from Kickout Wrestling and FairToFlare.com. How are you doing today?
Hello, hello. I'm good. How are you, sir?
Doing very well. We're here to continue our series talking about the main events of WrestleManias, and today we've got WrestleMania 3. And, you know, this really was not necessarily a match of consequence.
No.
Yeah. And didn't really, like, you know, make any difference in the wrestling world at all, you know.
Not even remotely the most important match of all time or anything like that.
No, not at all. Of course, we are talking about Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant, a very famous match. I would think that even if you were a relatively new fan, you've at least heard of the match and you know it's important. Maybe you don't know why it's important, but that's what we're here for. So
I think new fan, non-fan, anybody who even has a passing knowledge of anything related to wrestling, even a little bit, should know this match at least.
Yeah, definitely. So if you don't know, the background of the match is Hulk Hogan had been champion for about 3 years at this point and was clearly the number one star in wrestling and was, you know, very, very much the dominant hero in WWE. And Andre the Giant had been with WWE and had gone, you know, he traveled around lots of different places, but, you know, he was primarily with WWE and, was, you know, always just, he was the big attraction, you know, for years and years and years, but he never actually had a title shot. And so the whole thing was, Andre had, decided that he was, fed up with being second fiddle and decided that he, wanted a shot at the title. So there's it set up even before the famous angle with, Andre had been suspended, and wrestled under a mask for a while as the Giant Machine in a sort of a comedy thing where they would have the different wrestlers all like adopt secret identities as machines. Like even Hogan was Hogan Machine and Piper was Piper Machine. Kind of the whole, you know, the everyone knows it's you under the mask, but you don't actually reveal it kind of thing.
Yeah, for new fans, more like Mr. America or people who followed the John Cena firing for 2 weeks. He was doing Juan Cena on the house show circuit. So
exactly. Yeah, it was kind of like that deal. So but that didn't actually last very long. Didn't really work as well as they thought it would. So they ended up having where they were going to have a reinstatement hearing. But instead of Andre showing up, it was Bobby Heenan who showed up. And that kind of led to some, you know, they didn't show you what happened behind the scenes, but they showed you that. And then they had a segment with Hogan receiving a big trophy for being champion for 3 years or something along those lines. And then Andre received a smaller trophy for his accomplishments.
I wonder if anybody would get that same trophy now if they held the belt for 3 years.
I would hope so. At least they deserve something. You know,
Cena got a third of the way there not too long ago.
That's
but
true.
That's about it.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to be holding the belt for 3 years in a row anytime soon. Well, it would take 3 years at least. So from now it would be the soonest. But then Andre walks off. He's kind of, you know, disgusted. Everyone's kind of puzzled, like, oh, why did Andre walk off? That's weird. And then the next week, it was very soon afterward, he shows up with Bobby Heenan on Piper's Pit. And then just really, really famous deal where Andre, announces that he's with Heenan and then challenges Andre, says that he's always mad about being overlooked and, you know, wants to shout the title and all that sort of thing. And then Hulk, you know, begs that he doesn't want it to be true that, you know, that they're friends and that he's always looked up to Andre and blah, blah, blah. So then that's the point where Andre rips Hogan's shirt and the cross off of his chest.
And the crucifix, when he ripped the crucifix off his chest, I don't think you'd see anything like that today.
No.
That wouldn't fly.
No, definitely not. And that's the did Hogan always wear the crucifix at that time, or was that like...
As far as I remember, when I was a kid, I distinctly remember, you know, begging my mom for a cross necklace so I could look like the Hulkster.
Okay,
so,
okay.
As far as I know, he always had it.
Okay, I couldn't remember if that was like a thing that he always did. Or if that was... I mean, I knew he wouldn't have just worn it the one time, because that kind of would have been, I don't know, you know, obvious, but... I couldn't recall that. Okay, yeah. So the crucifix just kind of being ripped off there, and then, you know, it actually left a very, you know, he bled because it cut him, and then Piper there, you know, pointing out that, oh, you know, saying you're bleeding, just kind of matter of fact.
You're bleeding, yeah.
Yeah. That was just a really, I don't know, I mean, obviously just a really effective emotional, you know, segment, and, you know, just a very little thing they did just to, but it was really, really made it very serious.
It was one of my earliest wrestling memories. There are a few things I remember earlier than that, and I remember being really scared when I was a kid watching that because Andre's so big and the Hulkster's bleeding. And then in retrospect, you look back on that, and it very much symbolized that Hogan is not as immortal as you might think, and he's bleeding from the chest. Andre just manhandled him right there, and so he's not the unstoppable force as Gorilla Monsoon so frequently called him.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely showed Hogan as being more mortal. And, you know, this is among my earliest wrestling memories. I probably, you know, have a few, maybe a year, you know, a few, you know, at least within the year before this. But, you know, this is one of the first major ones. And I remember thinking, like, that, you know, it was impossible for me to believe that Hogan would lose, but it was also impossible for me to believe that Andre would lose. So that was, you know, it was like neither outcome of my mind, like, I could process. So yeah, just like the whole, just the way I felt, just how intrigued I was by, you know, that possibility, the way they built that up so well, you know, even if, you know, Hogan or the fact that Andre had not been body slammed or not ever lost wasn't true. It didn't matter because they built it up so well that, you know, not everyone believed it, but almost everyone believed it.
There's a lot of exaggeration surrounding that match too, especially that match. And I don't recall how much, got super exaggerated back then, but I remember, like, even during the match, Jesse Ventura bills Hulk Hogan at 6'8", yeah, Andre 7'5".
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then, and of course, Hogan played a part in that over the years too, saying he bench pressed the 800-pound Andre the
Right.
Giant.
Yeah. Andre keeps getting bigger over the years. Yeah. I think, you know, he's been at least 700 or 800 pounds. You know, I think he'll like be at like 1,000 pounds before Hogan dies. You know,
and nine feet tall too.
Right.
So.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be like Paul Bunyan or something. Yeah, and of course, you know, the whole deal with the crowd, you know, the 93,000 number that WWE bandied about that really turned out to be more like 78,000 or...
Yeah, only 78,000.
Right, exactly, yeah. yeah, it's funny. Yeah, and, you know, and the fact that, you know, I mean, I don't know if they... I mean, I'm pretty sure they did explicitly say this is the first time these guys have ever fought, when in fact, you know, they wrestled, like, all the time, just like five, 6 years earlier, but that was just like such a, like another era that, you know, I mean, a lot of people didn't know about it or, you know, wouldn't have, I mean, probably people would have remembered it if they'd lived there at the time. It was a big deal.
Yeah, but it didn't happen in your town and it wasn't on TV. You never knew.
Exactly. So. Right. Yeah. You know, and I don't
that was
think
like when belts would pass around all the time on house shows and stuff, and then everything would get reset back in time for weekly television.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't remember, like, you know, I read the magazines pretty regularly, but I don't remember them referencing, you know, the previous matches or anything. So I guess, you know, the magazines kind of went along with whatever the story was still at the time. So
yeah, the other thing that I thought was really interesting, I watched the match again today on the Hulk Hogan Ultimate Anthology, which I think is the second DVD set they put out for Hogan. Mm-hmm. And they had an interview with Vince on there, which was, it was all showing clips of the hype leading up to the match, and they talked to Hogan before the match. And really what I thought was cool was how close that we came to the match not happening at all. I know I've read some old observers over the years that said Andre, you know, they wanted, like, building up a year up until this match, that was always the plan. They wanted this match, but Andre was such a mess. His back was a wreck. Hogan didn't really want to do the match because him and Andre kind of were shaky for a little bit. I think until Hogan said they worked together in Japan, they weren't always the best of friends. And it took a phone call from Vince saying, there's going to be 90,000 people there. This is going to be a huge match. And Andre, you know, finally agree to do it. But it sounds like it very well, if Andre, you know, was the back problem was just a little bit more severe, it may have never happened. And it was such a big deal. And Vince calls it, he was like, it wasn't even a passing of the torch moment so much as it was the official stamp of approval for Hogan from Andre.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting, because yeah, it's kind of thought as like a passing the torch thing, but Andre really never had the torch. I mean, he was just kind of like on a different, you know, doing a different thing. I mean, he was probably, you know, top two or three star wrestling stars of the 70s and the 80s, but you know, it was just different. You know, he obviously, you know, couldn't really carry a company like Hogan could, because you know, he was the special attraction that needed to go around from place to place to work, because you know, once you saw him for a while, you saw what he could do, and then you know, it wasn't really special anymore. So
yeah, and the thing, Hogan didn't really need a torch passed to him. He was already the champion for 3 years,
right?
So
exactly.
It was definitely a stamp of approval from, I think back in those days, if Andre didn't like you, you were in trouble.
Right. Yeah, and it was, I mean, it was a thing that, you know, made Hogan from like the biggest star of the time to the biggest star probably ever in WWE history, or you know, very close to that level, depending on where you want to put Austin and Bruno. But so, yeah. So, I, you know, there's another interesting thing about this is that, you know, the Smarks of the time, and there were actually some Smarks at the time.
No, yeah,
yeah. They were not a fan of this match. They and I can see why. Although I think Dave Meltzer gave it -4 stars, which is pretty.
Now here's a question: is -4 star, that's worse than dud, right? It's something that it's worse than dud.
Yes.
I can never. I don't really follow the star rating system that much.
Right.
But so it's so bad, it goes beyond 0 stars to -4. I don't know how you quantify that, but yeah, when I was talking about those old observers, I remember reading it. Somebody posted on a message board I go to a lot. There were old observers, like a year's worth of them talking about how WWE, because WWE used to plot that far ahead, was how they were looking for Hogan Andre at WrestleMania 3, and it was like right after WrestleMania 2 that these newsletters started coming out, and it's like, there's no way this match could happen. If it does happen, it is going to be a total disaster. It'll be a bomb. It'll really sink WWE. They're going for this huge spectacle at this giant arena, and this match just it will never work. And of course, it winds up being WWE's definitive moment, at least up until that point, and probably still is in a way.
Yeah.
At least in my mind, it is. But
it's a top five, certainly, or top two or three. Yeah. It's interesting. I knew, I've read a couple of you know, handful of observers kind of from that era, but I didn't read them, the ones that predicted it would fail. That's funny, really funny in hindsight. But
it might not be so much that maybe they didn't think like the event itself would fail, but I know this match will never work. It will be, if they can make it happen, and it was all, there's no way this match can even happen, Andre can't work.
Okay.
Which at that point, Andre was, you know, in
very
bad
limited
shape,
yeah,
as we know.
Yeah.
And you, as by watching the match, you can see it. But they definitely seem like this match was going to be a disaster. And I guess in a technical sense, you might be able to say that. But I guess, you know, we can talk more about that here very soon.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, there's probably a 3-minute bear hug in the middle of it. And then there, the end with some of the out of the ring stuff they do is pretty shaky, but you know, honestly, the rest of it, I don't see anything that would, you know, that I would consider embarrassing or anything like that. Like I think it's, you know, perfectly credible. I mean, it's, you know, it's slow, it's basic, you know, they, you know, it's not, you know, crisp, but it's nothing that, like, you know, it's on the high end of the recent Undertaker Kane matches, I guess would be a decent example. You know,
fair enough. But the crowd at least stayed into it the whole time.
Oh, exactly.
Right? Well, flash bulbs are going and all that. But of course, we'll talk about that. I mean, if you're looking at it strictly, if you mute your TV, it's not the most exciting. It's I would say it's pretty dramatic, at least in the beginning and the end. But
sure.
But it's not. it's not even as good as, and I always use this as my example when people say, well, it was good, but, and whenever somebody says that, they're usually referring to The Rock versus Hulk Hogan from WrestleMania 18.
Sure.
But that was actually a pretty good match still, even if it wasn't, technically the best, it was still a really good Hulk Hogan match, which those are kind of rare in from a technical sense, at least.
Yeah.
And I think so. It's not even that good of a match. It's not as good as Rock Hogan. It's not as good as Hogan's match with Randy Savage or the Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, and that's just speaking strictly from a technical sense.
Right.
But in terms of spectacle and drama and all that, which of course we'll get to as I keep hyping up here.
Right. Yeah. Well, wrestling doesn't take place in a vacuum. I mean, wrestling, exactly. There are people. So, and people's response can vastly affect your feelings of, how interesting or not interesting a match can be. And this, and the crowd was, very much into this. Yeah. The story isn't as strong as some of the other ones you mentioned, as far as just the story told with the in-ring work, but,
yes.
but you're right. Yeah. I mean, it's fun to watch. I don't think anyone, would, take a look at this match. It's not a long match. It's, 12.
Yeah, it's quick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which oddly enough, I was looking because I was like, man, this is a really short match. I wonder if it's the shortest main event in WrestleMania history. Not even close.
Oh yeah.
There are a lot of WrestleMania matches. The final match on the card, which are way, way shorter than this one.
Okay.
Brent, Yoko, both of them.
Oh yeah.
Were shorter
that one
than
was
that.
Short. Yeah.
LT, Bam Bam Bigelow, but that's kind of an outlier. I think, Hogan, King Kong Bundy from the year before, that was even shorter inside the cage.
Huh.
So it's actually, especially in the first 10 years, the Hogan era of WrestleMania, it's actually pretty average in terms of length, which I'm surprised about.
Yeah. Savage Steamboat was only 2 minutes and 30 seconds longer than this match.
Really?
Yeah, it was 14:35 and then Hogan Andre's 12:01. According to Wikipedia, if that's to be believed.
That's what I used as my gauge, so
yes.
Therefore, we're good.
We're, yes.
If it's on Wikipedia, it must be true.
Well, we'll just go with that for now. So, all right, well, let's talk. I guess we'll just go into the match. I mean, obviously, the very famous classic moment. Well, before we get into that, I just want to mention the commentary, which also really helps make the match better. And one thing about Gorilla Monsoon, I think we're both big fans, and but there is he's another guy that I think the Smarks at the time really did not care for.
Yeah,
but I
don't understand that, but
I think I do understand it in a sense, but I think that was even more like in his later years after the kind of post Heenan where he kind of just slowed down and kind of the game had passed him by a little bit, but I think. A lot of it is just like the lack of calling the technical moves, and also I think Gorilla wasn't the best at selling the angles as much. I think Vince was much better at that, which is usually kind of it was his role, especially at the Saturday Night's main events. You really get the angles over. But I think the two things that Gorilla was really good at is one was setting the scene, setting up the match and the consequences of the match. I kind of this is a happening and kind of getting into, just kind of making it seem dramatic. And I think
he captured the atmosphere of the room they were in too, I think, incredibly well, especially in that match. You felt like you were there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he was really good at that. And Jesse was really great at playing off him. I really think the Jesse Gorilla, chemistry is pretty underrated. I mean, everyone talks about, Heenan and Gorilla, and obviously they were awesome, but I think, Gorilla and Jesse were pretty close too.
I love any pay-per-view that has Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon together on it. Just something about, and I love Bobby Heenan, but Bobby Heenan, not through any fault of his own, he steals the scene whenever he's there. I mean, he's Bobby Heenan. He's just so funny. And you want to listen to Bobby. And him and Gorilla played off each other so well. But I think when it came down to brass tacks and you wanted to get in on talking about the matches, I personally like Jesse and Gorilla the most from that era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think – and the other strong thing I think about Gorilla was the he would – make kind of the strategy of what the wrestler's doing was doing make sense. Even people would kind of complain when a wrestler would do an abdominal stretch and he would kind of complain that the wrestler wasn't doing it right. But I think Like, to him, like, I saw, I forget where I saw this theory written, so I'm kind of stealing it from somebody else, and I apologize for that. It was on a message board or something, and
yeah, they'll get over it.
Whoever it was, I give them credit, but they made a really good point, is that I think Gorilla was more concerned with actually getting, like, the wrestling over as opposed to the wrestlers over.
I agree with that. I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think, especially in later interviews with Gorilla Monsoon that I remember watching, like I remember on that A&E documentary they did in the late 90s when WCW and WWE were both really hot. I remember they were talking to him about Hulk Hogan, and he talked about how great Hogan was, and like he's like he didn't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch and all that. So I think Gorilla really had an appreciation for what went on in the ropes, in between the ropes a lot, and I think that came through.
Yeah, exactly. So. All right.
And Jesse was no slouch either.
And
Jesse was great in that because he was still the bad guy, but he really sold Hogan as legit and a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, even though he made it clear he didn't like Hogan, and he thought, you know, he was kind of a hypocrite. He, you know, called him a great champion, and you know, and like the thing about it was like when you know Gorilla would insult the baby faces, or I'm sorry, Jesse would insult the baby faces so much. That when it came time for him to give them credit for something or to compliment them, like it added like meaning to it, you know, like it
exactly.
made it like, yeah, it made it even more special. And you trusted what he was saying wasn't BS because like, you know, he would just was totally behind that. That was totally that character, totally fit. It totally worked. I mean, it was obviously just basically him, but yeah, I mean,
exactly.
You look at, you know, and I don't want to rip on today too much, but you look at like Michael Cole, who is like has this kind of like really effective, interesting heel persona, but it's like he's also doing like still like the main like, you know, needing to sell. He's both like the WWE shill and like the, you know, the cranky, you know, anti WWE guy. You know, it's like
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
It's a gripe I've had about Cole for weeks and months even. And
yeah.
I remember, you know, he's just now starting to turn on John Cena occasionally.
Yeah.
And then he was at the same time praising him during the whole Nexus thing, but bashing Nexus, but loving The Miz. It's, you got to pick a persona and go with it.
Yeah. It just, there's no consistency to that character. So even if elements of it are really interesting, it just hasn't really clicked yet. Or, you know, we're, you know, it might click, but we'll see. So anyway, so we going back to the beginning of the match, pretty famous deal where they stare at each other just for, you know, for a few minutes. They exchange some words, and then suddenly Hogan you know, hulks up, you know, right at the beginning of the
right
match,
away, yeah,
which he never did. And then, you know, they do a little bit of a shoving match. Hogan nails him with some punches and then picks him up for the body slam. But he can't, you know, hold the weight. He falls backwards. And then the two count that he barely squeezes out of that, you know, that they that Jesse insists is a three.
Insist, yeah.
And Heenan
three,
as well.
It's over.
Right. And that it should be over. And, of course, that's, you know, that just that little, you know, beginning of the match, you know, is justification to continue the feud later, you know, and is, you know, and they bring it up a lot and, you know, made it into a really like important thing.
Yeah. And then, then of course they go down. And the thing I love about that is right after he falls on Hogan, after Hogan fails to slam him, you know, Andre takes control of most of the match from that point.
Yeah.
And the thing I like to look at when I look at this match, I realized how much and how little has changed. Certain things like his body slams, when he just body slams Hogan over and over again, and Hogan sells that like it's death. Yeah, the body slam is the worst possible thing that could happen to Hogan. His back is just demolished from Andre slamming him. That doesn't really happen so much today. But then, like, the stare down, the spectacle, all that stuff that went on before it, all that drama, it's so still WWE to a T, even in 2011.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think you know, one thing underrated about Andre, particularly later in his career, is his, like, he didn't do a whole lot, obviously, but like everything he did almost like looked really good. Like, you know, his punches and kicks, and like, you know, like he really, you know, he laid it in, but he, like, I mean, he understood. I mean, he just understood how to work and was really good at, you know, at working his match, even as, you know, his body, you know, was betraying him. Now, you know, if he tried to bump or something, that, you know, could look awkward and completely understandable given, you know, his back problems. But, you know, I really do think that, you know, people who consider Andre a bad worker later in his career, I think are overlooking a lot of, you know, good elements that he had.
Yeah, I think Andre, even I think a lot of people don't really think about Andre so much, especially anybody probably my age and older, that don't follow wrestling as obsessively as people like you or I do. They don't really know a lot about what Andre did even before WrestleMania 3 so much. Maybe they know the Body Slam Challenge with Big John Studd and little things like that, the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 2. But Andre was actually really good for most of his career, and I think he got a lot of stuff that probably has been lost a lot along the years that people don't really do anymore. And I think for being as limited as he was, especially in the later years, I totally agree. He knew what to do and when to do it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, you know, yeah, they kind of do, you know, they kind of go back and forth for a while. Then, you know, Andre gets control with the bear hug, which actually goes 2:38.
Really? Did you time the bear hug?
I did time the bear hug. Yeah.
Although that's a long bear hug.
Yeah. Although the announcers do a good job of selling the effectiveness of the bear hug as he's doing it. Like I said, you're watching a wrestle and you would think it would be boring, but the way they just the commentary just really, you know, manages to be so good that you don't really mind, you know.
Yeah, Hogan can't get his breath, and the crowd's into it too, and you don't really get that a lot with the rest holds these days. And the other thing that they did that I love, and it's so old school, they don't really do it anymore, is the old three-arm check. If your arm drops three times, you're out. Yep. Not two, not four, but three. If it drops times, that's the end of the match. I don't know how many matches I remember seeing three-arm drop actually end that way. Maybe Brutus Beefcake squash matches, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, Hogan against Brock Lesnar.
Oh yeah, was that the last time they did it?
Probably last time they did it. Yeah, but that, I mean, that obviously that at the time was hugely old school, which made it a great finish, you know, because no one ever does it, except that they would do it in sleeper holds, you know, but never a bear hug. I don't think I've ever seen it other than that, you know, that match in a bear hug. Maybe like in the early 80s, if somebody had a bear hug as a finisher, like, I don't know, Ted Arcidi or somebody. I don't know. But then Hogan does fight out of it. Then
a miniature Hulk up out of the bear hug.
Yes. Yeah. And although he tries to fight out of it first, and then he wears himself out. And then, you know, Hogan comes in with some shoulder blocks and then runs into the chop. And then
a dreaded chop, and then gets booted to the outside shortly after that.
Yeah. So that's kind of when the outside portion is when it kind of breaks down a little bit, because they do, like, Hogan tries to do a headbutt while Hogan is up against the post, and then, you know, like, they show Andre ramming the post, but he didn't really quite ram the post. His head kind of missed.
A little whiff.
And then they do – I've never understood why they did this, but they have Hogan pulls up the floor mat and then tries to put Andre into a pile driver position.
he struggles to even get Andre into the spot for a pile driver.
Right, yeah.
Like, he's got to kind of, like, push himself up on the apron to get Andre's head between his legs.
And, yeah. Yeah, because Andre can't really even bend down that far. He's just so huge and whatever. And then, like, Andre, like, gives him, like, the weakest backdrop ever.
Hogan catches the apron so he doesn't really hit the mat so hard. I guess they were just trying to really, you know, sell Hogan coming up from all the back injuries he was sustaining through the match. But it did, you know, kind of fall a little flat there the outside.
Yeah. So, but it, you know, it didn't really, but, you know, they go back in, and Hogan manages to avoid Andre's boot and then comes off with the running clothesline, which is the first time that Andre is knocked off his feet during the match.
Ever, according to Jesse Ventura.
Oh, yeah.
He's never been knocked off his feet like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Jesse never seen that before. And then I love, like, Heenan here, like, trying to, like, direct Andre, like, rubbing his neck and shouting instructions. Like, Heenan is, like, a strategist outside of the ring. Yeah. I mean, it's not I don't need to tell you how great Bobby Heenan was as a manager,
but
those little things that he did, you know, just set him apart. Not that there's managers today anyway, so not that it really there's much to compare him to, but, you know, no one really, maybe Cornette, other than maybe Cornette, I don't think anyone ever compared to Heenan as a manager. So
agreed.
And then Hogan hulks up, he body slams Andre, comes off the ropes with a leg drop, and then it's the 1-2-3, and that's it. That's it. Yeah,
we just described the whole match, I think, move by move,
pretty much. And then the Silverdome erupts, and all is right with the world.
And Hogan does the old pose down, and Jesse threatens to come out of retirement to challenge him.
Again, yeah, he did that. I forget when he stopped doing that. I think five he might have. I think he did it at WrestleMania 5. I don't know if he did it after that. Because I think they were Warrior won WrestleMania 6, so it wouldn't have made sense to do WrestleMania 6 because he wasn't champion. And then I think Jesse was gone by WrestleMania 7. So
I believe you are correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one little last detail I really like is, Andre, you know, kind of vanquished in the, and then they go in and Heenan, you know, just exasperated, you know, they,
he just has his hand on his face the whole time. Yeah. Like, it's like the old, Picard face palm meme that goes around. That's just Bobby Heenan.
Exactly.
The whole way out.
Yeah, if you've never seen WrestleMania 3, they had like carts.
Oh, the carts, the ring carts.
Yeah, that they looked like a mini wrestling ring, and then you know they rode down, you know, back and forth. Although Hogan actually, I think he walked when
Hogan
he entered.
Hogan walked to the ring for WrestleMania 3. Yeah,
okay.
He walked all the way down. That was a long aisle too.
Yeah,
they played the whole thing, and Bob Uecker announced him.
That's right. Yeah,
announcer. But yeah, Hogan came all the way down, and Andre and Heenan were on the cart.
Yeah,
and that was one thing with the success of how good the old school Raw was last year. I think that they should just find one of the pay-per-views that nobody really cares about, like Fatal 4-Way or something like that, and make an old-school pay-per-view and bring those back for it. Those carts were so cool.
That would be awesome.
I miss those. That was one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Did they ever use the carts again other than WrestleMania 3?
I have this memory of them always using the carts when I was a kid. Like, I feel like they were used at least at some other point, but I honestly, I watch a lot of DVDs. I don't see them anywhere else except WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I feel like they did, but that could just be, you know, childhood memory coming out there.
Okay. Yeah, I don't honestly, I don't think they ever did. I mean, it would kind of make sense at, like, you know, like the Sky Dome WrestleMania, or like one where they did like at the, you know, obviously the big huge stadiums, but you know, those shows, you know, were pretty limited. I know they didn't do it at WrestleMania 6, so
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't think they did it at 4 or 5 either, because I think the Trump Plaza had the stairs.
Yeah, they didn't do them, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, although those are interesting atmosphere with the stairs and the carpet. WrestleMania 4 is one of my personal favorite wrestling shows ever, just because it was the first one I ever watched live, and I taped it, so I watched it over and over and over again when I was a kid. So I remember that one quite well.
Yeah, I know a lot of people rag on that show, but it does kind of drag in some parts because it's long.
Yeah,
it is a long
yeah.
show. I remember when you go to Blockbuster when you were a kid, that came in 2 VHS tapes.
Okay,
they were rubber banded together.
I managed to get it on one tape, I guess. I guess I had it like on the extended play, so I had like a 6-hour thing. But yeah, so it was a very long show, but it's but anyway. WrestleMania 3, back to WrestleMania 3,
yes.
That's a great main event, and, you know, even, you know, maybe, you know, not necessarily the greatest wrestling show ever overall, even though it has this and it has Savage Steamboat, but
really, that's it. I think it's actually, to me, it's one of the worst WrestleManias if you're looking for, you know, card top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, everything else is, like, good, but there's nothing else that's, like, great. I mean, there's nothing really terribly bad on it.
No, there's nothing bad, but there's nothing you really remember either. I don't think anybody remembers the 5-minute Harley Race Junkyard Dog match.
No, or that was kind of bad, actually.
I think people remember Jake Roberts and Alice Cooper against the Honky Tonk Man. That was a pretty big
game. Piper and Adonis, that was a big one too.
Piper and Adonis, even though that was a pretty short match too, but that was such a big deal for Piper because you know, he retired after that match.
He did, yes. Yeah. And the other one would have been the Hart Foundation and Danny Davis against the British Bulldogs and Tito Santana, which I don't know, Danny Davis was like my most hated wrestler at the time because I don't know, just the referee had cheated, you know, he cheated the British Bulldogs, and now he's a referee, and or now he's a wrestler, and it's like, you know, I want get that guy, and then of course the heels ended up winning. I was very sad about that, but
yeah, it's there. You know, 12 matches on that card, and I don't know if WWE runs cards that big anymore. But
not too many, no.
That's pretty light for those early WrestleManias, though. There were a lot of matches on those early shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess a lot of this stuff just doesn't really stand out, probably because Savage Steamboat is so amazing and Hogan Andre is so important.
Yeah. Well, and also I guess the other thing is that, like, now on every WrestleMania on every match on a WrestleMania show would have a storyline built around it. So it would be, like, built up at least for, like, you know, a month or a couple months, depending on, like, even like, you know, the mid card or the lower card matches. I guess Money in the Bank might be an exception, but basically the rest of them are. But, you know, this WrestleMania, I mean, a lot of those matches were just random, you know, star versus star matches that didn't really have, like, you know, like Killer Bees versus Volkoff and Sheik didn't have any storyline behind it. They were just two tag teams yeah. that were, you know, I mean, the inherent storyline in wrestling is they want, you know, to win to get, like, shots at the title. But beyond that, you know, that was basically it. So
yeah, those earlier, yeah, you're right, those earlier WrestleManias had a lot of that. I would say probably, what would you say, like 12 is when that kind of started to really change.
Well, yeah,
and there were, I mean, there were still some random matches thrown on the early ones and maybe some after that. WrestleMania 13 springs to mind as one like that, but I think for the most part, I guess Attitude Era was what kind of really changed that.
Yeah,
even though there were some Attitude Era shows that had some hastily thrown together matches on there too.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. For the most part, yeah, I would think that you're right. Probably around 12 would have been when, like, yeah, kind of every match had a storyline behind it, and then like 18 or 19 would have been like the time when, like, they started having like four main events for every WrestleMania. You know.
Yeah, and then I think like 17, I say, would be the where every match had to be at least a fairly big deal. Like, it had to be kind of a big deal to see that match.
Yeah, that seems fair. That sounds about right.
Not that WrestleMania since 17 haven't had their share of filler. There's no doubt about that. But
right.
But I think 17 on was really when, I mean, not that WrestleMania didn't have a big feel to it, but I think especially, like, if you look at the sets and, like, the set pieces of the WrestleManias between in, like, the 90s going up until 16, WrestleMania 2000, they didn't really look huge like they did starting at 17, 18, and then they had, yeah, everybody's got the giant stage with the huge WrestleMania and the big walkway. So I think that's when they really started making it, not that it wasn't already the Super Bowl of wrestling, but they really upped the spectacle of it, I think, with 2001.
Right, right, definitely. So any more thoughts on Hogan and Andre?
To me, I every year on Kickout, I put out I add a match for the top 26 or top, this year it'll be the top 27 matches in WrestleMania history, and I can't see myself taking Hogan Andre off number one, even though it's not, technically speaking, a great match. I think my number two match is Steve Austin, Bret Hart, which is just a fantastic match, one of my favorite matches of all time. It's just an excellent wrestling match. But at the same time, I just can't, and the way I look at wrestling, I can't put anything above Hogan and Andre because of how important it was, and that visual of Hogan slamming Andre, how much it stuck with us through the years.
Absolutely. All right, well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back with more WrestleManias here, and remember, always drink to sunshine.